Sawbones is a show about medical history, and nothing the hosts say should be taken as medical advice or opinion. It's for fun. Can't you just have fun for an hour and not try to diagnose your mystery boil? We think you've earned it. Just sit back, relax, and enjoy a moment of distraction from that weird growth. You're worth it.
All right. Song is about some books. One, two, one, two, three, four.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Sawbones, a marital tour of misguided medicine. I'm your co-host, Justin McElroy.
And I'm Sydney McElroy.
And I am so delighted to be with you here now, Sydney, recording. I have two monitors set up now.
It's very intimidating because
it's a hot topic of conversation.
It is?
Well, my brothers were making fun of me because it looked like I was looking off camera, but really I was just looking at the other monitor.
I don't know why you need two monitors.
Well, that's a great question, Sydney.
I don't have one.
Okay, let me put it to you this way. Do you have multiple drawers for your clothes?
Yes.
Okay, well, websites are like the clothes of my mind, and I need to have a lot of them open at once.
Websites are the clothes of your mind?
Yes, and you got to have a lot of them open at once. I don't know what to do if I don't have 20 websites going at once.
I got my laptop right here in front of me, and I have a bunch of tabs open. Like, there's a bunch of different...
Yeah.
You know,
it is a problem.
I'm looking at four different documents that I am currently working on, like
as we speak.
Well, no, not while we're recording, but like they are all open and unfinished, and I am still working on all of them at the same time. Like, I switch between them as I think of different things to write for each one of them.
Oh, that's great. Wow. Your brain is exhausting to me. I love it. I'm glad it's in your head and not mine. It is so daunting.
I also have to have something on TV and music playing while I'm doing that.
Oh, wow.
And then occasionally text messages to interrupt.
Yeah. But you know what? Everybody's different.
Yes.
And anyway, there is a thin gap between my monitors where I can see my beautiful wife and hear the story of...
You can go ahead.
Dr. Willard Bliss.
That's right.
I don't know who that is, but that's the name that you sent me.
That is the name I sent you. Thank you, Daniel, for sending us this topic suggestion. It is a good one because we've touched on Dr. Willard Bliss before.
Touched on?
Yes.
Not touched?
No.
Okay.
No. No, we did not get consent, and he died long before we lived. So,
you know,
those are two barriers right there.
I would say the second one is maybe the headline. and then maybe we follow up with that.
Either way, we have mentioned him, but you might not remember because the episode where we talked about him, actually this is a series of episodes, I believe, where we talked about the U.S. presidents.
Oh,
do you remember those?
Right, yeah.
And the various illnesses and traumas and wounds and whatnot that had befallen various presidents. Mm-hmm. That is where we mentioned Dr. Willard Bliss, but we didn't really dive into him much. But I think he's worthy of a whole episode because he's an interesting, somewhat controversial figure.
Okay, tell me more.
So D.W. Bliss is his name.
D.W. Bliss,
okay? This is important. Oh, you're going to love this so much. So he was born in Brutus, New York in 1825.
Okay.
His name was inspired by a surgeon that his family, I'm assuming, must have admired, knew, and must have admired, right? Why else would you name your child after someone if you didn't have some level of
connection,
yes,
right?
Respect, admiration, love, care, whatever the relationship was. He was named for a surgeon who was named Samuel Willard. And now I think it's really important that I clarify what exactly they took from this surgeon, Samuel Willard. So, of course, Willard,
yes,
they took that part, but also he was a doctor,
okay,
and they liked that. And I assume wanted their son to be a doctor as well, Because when I say I am talking about Dr. Willard Bliss, I mean his first name is Doctor.
Oh, that's good.
I knew you'd love that. Oh, Dr. Willard Bliss would go on to become Dr. Willard Bliss.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. Yes. His first name was Doctor.
That is wild. That is wild.
So I will probably usually refer to him as Dr. Bliss because Dr. Willard Bliss is me saying his full, like, first, middle, and last name without
signifying
the honorific.
Right now, he's just, at the beginning of his life, he's just Dr. William Bliss.
Dr. Willard Bliss.
Dr. Willard Bliss.
And then he goes on to become Dr. Doctor. Which is what, like, for instance, in my line of medical work, I am often called Dr. Sydney. I usually don't go. The Dr. McElroy is too formal, but somehow Sydney just won't stick.
Okay.
With my patients. Like, I just tell them to call me by my first name. Like, this is all, we're super cash.
Hey, it's cash.
We're super cash. But that doesn't stick either. So Dr. Sydney is what has come through. Or just Doc. That's usually.
Oh, that's good.
Just
that's, Doc. Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, so Dr. His parents wanted him to be a doctor, clearly, and he fulfilled that. You know what? He had a brother.
Brother?
No.
Brother Bliss.
Well, I mean, no, because, like, well, why would you name your... Now, that would be wild if you named one of your kids after the profession that you hoped they would have someday, and then the other kid you just named because of their relationship to the first kid.
Yes.
That would... If you want to give a kid a complex, that's the way to do it. No, but the other kid, you're like, well, what did they name his brother? Because, like, surely it must have been for his future career.
Right.
His name was Zenas.
Zenas? So,
Z-E-N-A-S. Zenas.
Yeah. I guess it's better that than, like, repeat offender Bliss.
Well, I guess he
serial
can,
killer Bliss.
I mean, that must have been very freeing. Zenas can be anything.
Yeah.
Doctor.
You got one choice.
Yeah.
I hope you like Doctor.
So Doctor did what he was expected. He went to Cleveland Medical College. He published his thesis on false joints, which is so this is when
had a
basically
few of those in college. Mainly oh salvia.
God. You feel good about that? All right. So he basically, this is when a fracture doesn't heal correctly. And you can kind of see it if you look at an x-ray. So imagine a bone. You've got, like, the joints on either end of the bone where they connect with something, right?
Okay.
Okay. Yes. Well, if it breaks right in the middle and then it doesn't heal in the right place, like a non-union, so it's not completely together.
Okay.
You've got a false joint there.
Okay.
It looks like an area where two bones are coming together, but it's not. It's where one bone has not healed completely.
Okay. That makes sense.
Same idea. This is a real thing. This is a thing that can happen if a fracture doesn't heal.
Okay.
Appropriately. Right. So it hurts and it might be a little unstable there because it didn't heal all the way. He quickly got into some trouble, though.
Oh, no.
So early in his medical career, he started selling something called Kundurango.
Kundurango?
Kundurango.
Okay.
Okay. This was like one of our, oh, man, this is a great classic cure-all. Okay? This okay. is like, I don't think we've ever talked about Kundurango on Sawbones.
It does not ring a bell.
Mm-mm. It was, so this is a type of woody vine that grows, especially in Ecuador. That's where it came from. It was, and that's, you know, a lot of the, like, kind of cure-alls that we talk about, they will be given a backstory that they were used, like, by an indigenous culture. Like, this is right. a folk medicine thing that
appeal
we have.
Appeal to ancient wisdom.
Exactly. Like, we have taken this, and it has been used and whatever for a long time. And sometimes those stories are true, and then sometimes they are, like, retrofitted to make something seem like it has more worth than it really does. I would say this is somewhat in the middle because it was known to have activity in the human body, but it was also perceived as somewhat poisonous.
Mm.
So it wasn't necessarily being used as a cure-all by indigenous cultures before, you know, we Westerners stole it. But it was touted as this... I mean, the big thing was as a cure for cancer in its time. That's where it rose to fame as like, this is a cure for cancer. There were other things you could use it for, but that was the big purpose. The story behind it that would be, that probably wasn't true, but that was spread far and wide, was that There was someone dying of cancer. You know, like, again, these would have been, like, indigenous people. So there was somebody who was dying of cancer, and his wife, attempting basically to alleviate his suffering and hasten his death, gave him some Kundurango, knowing it was poisonous, as a way to, like, you know, as, like,
wrap it up.
Yeah, well, I mean, in a humane way. I don't mean, like,
tastefully wrap it up.
Yeah, I'm talking about, like, choosing. Like, choosing to end your life, to end your suffering kind of thing. I don't mean like she was murdering him.
I think we were saying the same things.
Yes. So anyway, he took it, and instead of dying, he got better.
Oh.
And so at that point, it began to be widespread as like, oh, well, okay, actually, this isn't a poison. This cures cancer. And isn't this exciting? So the word spread, and people began to administer it for a variety of different things, right? Like, that's right. What usually happens. You find out something, like, at this point in history, it works for something, so it must work for everything.
Right.
And heck, I say this point in history.
This is now.
This is now.
This is now.
Like, oh, it has an effect. We should use it on everything. Even as these, like, reports were being spread that this was something that could cure cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And we're like in the 1800s at this point, probably like the mid 1800s to late 1800s is where we're moving into as this was being popularized. You're really at the edge of when you could get away with that stuff. You're starting to move into a time period where science and like the empiric
there's a more method, a general acceptance of like there is a standard by which we do these things.
We are moving further and further away from the patent medicine days as you get to the turn of the century and then, you know, moving forward. Like the scientific method is becoming more prominent. And so even as this was being spread as like, hey, this is a cure for cancer, there were people investigating that to see like, is this really like I'm going to go behind these patients that were supposedly cured, I'm going to go find those people and interview them.
Mm.
And what they were finding, people were reporting, is like, I went to find this person who was cured by Kundurango and they died.
Oops.
So they didn't cure them.
Did not cure.
So, I mean, there was already a lot of like controversy around this, even as it was being touted as this like miracle cure. Either way, there was a diplomat there from the U.S. who wanted to settle the matter by sending samples of this vine back to the U.S. to different doctors there to say, like, hey, test it. Try this out. Let's settle this.
We'll say what we got
here. Once and for all. Give it to some patients. You know, because you could just do that back then.
Yeah.
Like, here, take this.
Take this.
I don't know.
You're going to do science. You want to do science? I'd like to live. Well, okay. What if you would live maybe, but do science? Definitely.
But can I tell you though, this is like why IRB approval, like the idea that before you do a study or give people an experimental drug, you have to like get a board of people to say like, yes, this is an okay thing to do. The reason we do that is because in this exact situation, and this exists now, you have someone who is being told, okay, you have cancer. We barely understand it.
Right.
All we know is we can't fix it. All we know is that all the stuff we do seems to either not help or make it worse. And it will kill you. I have this vine. I have this bark. I have this,
hear me
I
out.
Have this substance. It probably does nothing. It might be poison or it might cure cancer. We have no idea, but it's either that or you definitely die. So
you tell me.
So you want it?
Yeah.
And that's the problem is like almost any sane person would say,
sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll take it. Of course. Yeah. Of course. Like, what's the alternative? Of course, I'll try it.
Right.
And so this is why we have approval for these things, is because you're getting people who are very vulnerable and in a situation where like there's an illusion of choice.
Right.
But there really isn't.
You need an impartial third party.
So anyway, it was sent to different doctors to try it out. And one of the doctors who got it, of course, was Dr. Bliss.
Dr. Bliss.
And he was
not
just
got it like patient wise, got it like To use,
to patients. And he was wild about it. He claimed that he cured three people of cancer.
Dang.
With this Kundurango.
That's really impressive.
Yeah. He was very excited. He cured three people. These accounts of it were published alongside of this, like the account, like basically the whole story kind of broke at once. Like this diplomat finds ancient traditional cure for cancer, sends it to doctors in the U.S., and then Dr. Bliss is like, yes, this is the best stuff ever. I cured three people.
Hooray. So,
and at the same time, he sets up an importing business.
To get as much of it over here as possible.
Exactly, so that he can get that miracle drug out there and start making some cash. He was selling it for $160 a pound. And then, and let me start with that, $160 a pound, which actually... Justin.
Yes, Sydney.
If we look up at like 1850, what was $160 in 1850? What would that be in 2023 money?
Hold on. I'll tell you.
It's a good estimation. It would have been in late 1840s, early 1850s. So 1850.
Okay. So when are we talking?
1850, $160.
Okay. That is $6,311 today per pound.
Wow. For a pound of this stuff.
Yeah.
Now, I will say that almost as soon as he started selling it, there were already authorities who were like questioning this stuff and like investigating the tactics being used to sell different patent medicines and stuff like that. And so the price was quickly dropped to $38 a pound to try to like fly under the radar a little bit more, so to speak.
All right. Just out of curiosity, that is... $1,500 per
still
pound. Still pricey.
And now the thought would be that like you would like, yes, individuals could buy it. Also doctors could buy it to administer to patients, and then the patients would have to pay the doctors, of course. But either way, so it's super expensive. And almost as soon as he starts selling it, there are other doctors who are like, oh, I tried that. That didn't work. Yeah. Like, no. I was one of the other doctors who got sent that, and it definitely did not have the miraculous results that you were saying it did. They said, I mean, like a lot of them didn't even, like they gave it to somebody, it did nothing, they moved on. Like It was so ineffective. And as a result of all this in 1853, Bliss was actually kicked out of the Washington, D.C. Medical Society. So it was like, and the reason this is important is that this was a visible, like people knew this guy is pushing a fake medicine.
Right.
So this definitely harmed his reputation, right? And I think it's important to understand that he was not like a doctor who was widely accepted to be an amazing, like, super doctor. Even though he was doctor, double doctor.
Right.
He wasn't widely accepted to be this amazing physician. He had been thrown out of the medical society. And I think this is important to know because he's about to treat some U.S. presidents.
Oh, wow.
And I'm going to tell you about that after we go to the billing department.
Let's go. The medicines that escalate macabre for the mouth. You got so much to take care of. Spring's right around the corner. You're busy. You're cleaning up. You're getting your life back in order. You're getting ready to emerge like from your chrysalis, like a beautiful butterfly. You don't have time to slave away in the kitchen. You don't have time to waste a bunch of time cooking dinner that you don't have time to do. You got to get out there, but you still got to feel your body, give it the delicious, fresh stuff that it craves, right? Well, good news, because there's Factor. These meals are always fresh, never frozen, and they're ready to eat in about 2 minutes. You don't have to prep them. No prep, no stress. Slap them in the microwave, heat them up, and they're going to be delicious. Not like the microwave meals you remember from when you were a kid, kind of grody. These are nice. These are designed by dietitians. They're crafted by chefs. So you're going to eat well. You're going to eat in a way that sustains you and makes you happy. And it's not going to take a lot of your time. Head to factormeals.com/sawbones50off and use code sawbones50off to get 50% off and free breakfast for a year. Eat like a pro this month with Factor. New subscribers only, varies by plan. One free breakfast item per box, one for 1 year while subscription is active. You know, sometimes I waste too much time thinking. Thought is the root of all suffering. You know, I that's something that I've heard that I think there's a lot of truth in. So why don't we try letting let go of thought and get into action, right? Get your project in front of you and start building a website for it with Squarespace. Squarespace is a fantastic tool for creating your website because
first of all, you can start building out these ideas in a way that lets you visualize them, right? I'm not a thinker that thinks in words. I have to think in images. So with a Squarespace website, you're able to start taking that idea out of your brain and putting it in front of you. And it's going to look great because the templates you're going to be using are made by world-class designers, some of the best in the biz. And if you're having trouble with any of the stuff that you're doing with your Squarespace website, they have incredible support that's there to have your back every step of the way. And with a Squarespace website, you can't just like share information. You can really kind of do anything with these websites. You can sell products, calendars, just keeping in touch, whatever. The Squarespace tools are incredibly powerful and flexible and well worth checking out. Head to squarespace.com/sawbones for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use offer code sawbones to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
Oh, darling, why won't you accept my love?
My dear, even though you are a duke, I could never love you. You borrowed a book from me and never returned it.
Save yourself from this terrible fate by listening to Reading Glasses.
We'll help you get those borrowed books back and solve all your other reader problems.
Reading Glasses, every Thursday on Maximum Fun.
I'm Emily Heller.
And I'm Lisa Hanawalt.
And we're the hosts of Baby Geniuses.
We've been doing our podcast for over 10 years.
When we started, it was about trying to learn something new every episode.
Now it's about us trying to actively get stupider. And it's working.
Hang out with us and you'll hear us chat about
gardening,
horses,
various problems with our butts,
and all the weird stuff that makes us horny.
That's so weird, all that stuff. Baby Geniuses, a show for adult idiots.
Every other week on Maximum Fun.
Baby Geniuses, we know everything. Baby Geniuses, tell us something we don't know.
Sydney, even our great heroes, the U.S. presidents, are not immune to the charms of fake medicine.
No, absolutely they're not.
Our greatest American heroes, and even they are vulnerable.
Absolutely they're not. No, I mean, if you go back to the annals of medical history, you will find presidents who have suggested things like injecting bleach into our veins.
You got to go way back.
I mean, and you can find presidents who have suggested things like if we could get like ultraviolet light inside our bodies, like put lights inside that we could kill illnesses, like maybe a virus or something.
You like, got to be think talking about way. Like Polk or Harrison, one of those like
you got to go.
Way
I mean,
back.
way back to find examples of absolute like. I don't know if ignorance is a strong enough word.
Like thinking it'll be wrapped up by Easter, and wouldn't mm-hmm. that be lovely?
Yeah.
Whatever it may be, like whatever pandemic may be happening.
Right, right. I mean, there are some truly wild suggestions that have come from, I mean, historical figures in the American presidency. So in the midst of all this, somewhere, he may have treated Zachary Taylor for malaria. So there's mm-hmm. our first little... presidential. This is important.
Yeah.
But that it's funny because I was reading about like, oh, he treated two presidents because we're going to get into the other one that he treated famously was responsible for maybe his death. Bliss may have treated Zachary Taylor as well, which is like that's cool. Two different presidents. But on the flip side, like if you look at the dates,
mm-hmm.
he wouldn't have had a medical degree yet.
Oh, wow.
But at the same time, that also isn't that wild for the time.
Sure,
like the idea
right.
that he would have been in training or apprenticing or something and like maybe still doing medicine. That's not that wild.
I guess, but like
so it's possible.
Is it a sitting president though? Like you think they
no.
could spring for a doctor?
Not that. At that okay. point, no.
All right, gotcha.
No. Now he will treat a sitting president soon.
Okay.
He did serve as a surgeon during the Civil War. And I think that this again. Maybe this helps inform why he's going to be called up to treat the U.S. president, is that there's like this mixed bag of accomplishments. So we have this already this history of he's thrown out of the medical society for pushing a fake medicine. But on the flip side, he was a strong advocate for the inclusion of black physicians in the medical society.
Okay.
So and he was also ostracized for that. So like part of the reason he didn't have the best reputation was because he was doing some good stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, he was a strong advocate for homeopathy.
Oh, no.
So that's bad. And what that resulted in is that, like, he was so criticized for adopting homeopathy when it was kind of, like, on the rise, when it was at least in our part of the world, it was on the rise. Mm-hmm. He was, like, an early adopter. Like, this is new. This is great. Kind of like with the Kundurango. This is new. This is great. I'm on the cutting edge. I love this stuff. And he was so – and he was thrown out of medical societies and really, like, you know, fell out of favor for all this stuff. When Lister shows up around this same time and is like, hey, I have this great new theory about, you know, antiseptic technique and about the importance of keeping things clean and sterile so that we don't pass infections and, like, you know, hand washing was just being popularized and all this stuff – Dr. Bliss was like, definitely not buying any of that. Okay. Definitely not.
A real mixed bag, this
guy. Right. Like, it's a roller coaster of things happening with this guy. Because, like, and it's important to know that he did not buy into antisepsis. He did not buy that we needed to clean things, our instruments or our hands or wear gloves or anything that would prevent us from just sticking our dirty, unwashed fingers into an open, like, let's say, bullet wound.
Sure.
There were no precautions taken in those situations. And this would lead to the hallmark of his career, which is when President James Garfield was shot on July 2nd, 1881. This is why, if you've ever heard of Dr. Bliss, this is probably why, because of his association with President Garfield. So like I said, he was not a particularly well-respected physician. And so you may wonder, like, the president's been shot. They need to call a doctor.
Okay.
How in the world does this guy get the call? Now, part of this—
They just looked up doctor in the phone book, and it was the first—
He was the first one.
This guy's got it twice, like—
There's a couple reasons that explain this. There was someone involved with the president. There was one of his staff who claimed that Dr. Bliss had treated Abraham Lincoln.
Okay.
Which he was maybe around, but maybe was not as involved as he later would go on to claim he was involved. So that was a little questionable. But, like, there was this connection. He maybe did this thing with Zachary Taylor where he treated his malaria. He had served. That was respected, of course. Yes. Like, so, like, there were some people who were like, I heard about that guy. I think he's pretty good. I don't know, maybe. But then there's also this
story. I heard
story.
Something about him. I don't remember if it was good or not, but we should get him in here with the president.
There's also this story from the White House steward of the time, Mr. Crump, who said that.
Sorry, one more time.
Who said, Mr. Crump. Who he's recounting, like, a moment after Dr. Bliss has already been called to take care of the president, and he's sitting by his bed and he's holding his hand, and he says, Garfield had hold of Dr. Bliss's hand and turned his head and asked me if I knew where he first saw Bliss. I told him I didn't, and then he said he would tell me. He said that when he was a youngster and started for college at Hiram, he had just $15, a $10 bill in an old leather pocketbook, and a five in his trouser pocket. Anyway, he was footing it up the road. It was hot. He took off his coat. He was taking good care not to drop his pocketbook that has his money in it, right? Because this is his college tuition, by the way. This $15, this is his college tuition.
Okay.
I know. Everybody can take a moment to, like, feel nauseous. What is your college tuition? It was $15 at this
that's
point.
Great.
Yeah. After a while, he was thinking about college. Anyway, he turns
out— Let's be also clear, though. College was probably a bit of a joke back then. Like, they didn't know anything. What
they
are you going to learn?
Stuff. People knew stuff.
What are you going to learn?
There have always been
Come
smart
on.
People.
Yeah.
And there have always been not smart people.
I'm just being that.
That's the human race. So he drops his purse. And he goes back along the road trying to find it. And he can't find it. And he comes up to a house. And there's this dude leaning on a gate. And he's like, I'm looking for a purse. Have you seen it? And the guy's like, yeah, actually, I do. And I'm going to hand it right over to you with the money still in it. Didn't take any of the money. Handed it right back over. And that was Dr. Bliss.
Wow.
Who gave him his cash back. Got him, which he credited with, like, you know, if I hadn't, like, and Bliss supported this, you know, if I hadn't done that, you wouldn't have gone to college, and then you probably never would have been president of the United States. Which you could also pair with, like, and then he probably also wouldn't have been shot.
Yes, that's true, but sliding doors. I mean, you can't. I need to talk about Mr. Crump. If you name your kid Dr., you are guaranteeing that he will be a doctor. I think even more than that, if your child is named Mr. Crump,
you are guaranteeing they're going to be a steward at the White House, probably under James Garfield. Like, Mr. Crump can only do, think about it. I'm local Lothario, Mr. Crump. I run a watch store. My name is Mr. Crump.
I think you're not.
I'll be your lawyer, Mr. Crump.
We don't know his first name. Like, if he had
it's Mr.
If he had the right first name, we could pull it off. As a Lothario.
It's Jeeves. His name is Jeeves Crump.
What if his first name is Sexy?
Sexy Crump?
Sexy Crump.
Sexy Crump?
He could be a Lothario if his first name's Sexy.
Sexy's my middle name. Oh, yeah? It's my fur. They call me
Sexy Jeeves Crump.
They call me Dr. Willard Bliss Crump.
No, his name wasn't Crump. So for whatever reason,
Dr. Willard Sexy Bliss, Dr. Sexy Bliss, that's a name. If they wanted to get a good doctor going, that's the name for your kid, Dr. Sexy Bliss.
But you read all these stories and it's like, so did he call him to his bedside because he had this like old relationship with him? If so, why wasn't he his personal physician? Because he was not the personal physician to the president. Absolutely not. There was a personal physician to the president who would show up like 2 days later. And Bliss would get in a fight with him basically and be like, this is my show, bud.
Yeah.
I'm going to make history with this. I am going to be remembered for this, which he is remembered for this. And you are not, and you're going to get out of here, which is kind of what Bliss did. Like, so he showed up to tend to Garfield after he was shot. Other doctors tried to help, and he basically ran everybody off and then sort of restaffed with his own team, like his own hand selected team, kind of like House does, you know. And once he had his people to help him, he started off with his treatment method. A lot of this involved probing the wound repeatedly with his fingers and dirty instruments. And it was all in this effort to remove the bullet, which a lot of this has been questioned through medical history, because at this time period, we already kind of knew that you didn't necessarily have to. Like, sometimes you do. And obviously, it's a lot more common today that you'd go in and get whatever it is out. But back then, because there was such a high risk with surgery, mm-hmm. the idea of digging around to pull a bullet out, you wouldn't always do that. There are times where you can leave it be, and that's actually less harm. Mm-hmm. But he didn't buy it, so he dug around in there with his dirty hands and his dirty instruments, definitely introducing infection. Other doctors did as well that were part of the team, so like it was probed multiple times.
But when the lead doc is like, hand washing, not for me.
Exactly.
What standard are you shooting for here?
We are still at a time where a lot of doctors kind of felt like the blood stains on the coat and the dirty hands, and that there was even like there was a smell that it was like the stink of the something. I forget. Anyway, all of that was good.
Yeah.
Like to have like the stink of the OR on you was a good thing. You should be bloody and gross.
Yeah.
You're a doctor.
Like a butcher.
but you're a doctor. So he was using those techniques. He actually at one point he had Alexander Graham Bell come because he'd made like a metal detector, basically, like an early metal detector.
Oh, nice.
To try to find the bullet. And he wasn't able to find it, and Bliss blamed him and was like, your thing doesn't work. It's your fault. Mm-hmm. But it did work. It's this same device actually did work on other people in the same time period. So what we now think is that Bliss was telling him to look in the wrong area.
Mm.
That Bliss was very certain this is where the bullet must be. And he actually just had a wrong like idea of the trajectory of the bullet and where it would have ended up. And that if Bell had been allowed to look in a different place, he probably could have found it. Which is kind of cool. Now, I don't know that would have helped because, again, I don't know that digging around in his abdomen anymore would have made things better. Bliss would also use rectal feeding as an important method of, like, improving the nutritional status of Garfield and, like, even
Sorry. I have to make a request.
Yes.
If you're going to use a phrase like rectal feeding, you have to specify that you mean President Garfield and not Garfield. Okay. You can't have an audio file out there where you're like, I use rectal feeding on Garfield. And then people will just make that their text tone. You can't do that. You have to specify who you meet. Take it again. Take it clean. We'll get it in post.
He used rectal feeding on President Garfield.
Thank you.
James Garfield.
President,
you might be
James.
Doing some historical fiction, right, where Garfield's elected president is shot because of an imagined political debt or whatever it was. And then, okay, President James Garfield.
And you can read more about this in the study that he did publish, Feeding Per Rectum, as illustrated in the case of the late President Garfield.
He always did it on Mondays, and no one could figure out why.
Do you think it was lasagna?
Shut up. Take it back. You don't mean that.
It wasn't. It was a way of introducing nutrition. He was hoping he could do so through the rectum because he was having trouble eating. Anyway, the point is he employed a lot of the techniques that he would have used would have been like commonplace at the time, right? Like we did a lot of stuff that was not necessarily helpful throughout all of medical history, including probably yesterday.
Sorry.
I mean, it's science, man. But anyway, so he tried to remove the wound. There would have been like caustics used, of course, things like laxatives and certain feeding techniques and nutritional supplements. And all of this amounted to Garfield, President Garfield, not getting better. He lingered on for like 2 months before he would die. Now, there has been much debate as to did he die from being shot or did he die from the treatment that he received for the 2 months after he was shot?
I looked it up and it was 79 days. So I'm going to go ahead.
2 months.
I'm going to go ahead and give that credit to old William Bliss.
Which was the defense, by the way, from the guy who shot him. Charles Guiteau, who was actually the one who shot President Garfield.
He's like, I didn't kill him.
His doctors did.
I wounded him.
Yeah, I did shoot him. Definitely me. But I am not responsible for the death of the president.
Yeah.
His doctors killed him. That did not work. He was found guilty and executed. And I will say, it's funny because I found there have been papers published since then.
Funny?
Interesting.
Okay.
Where people have gone back to like analyze the medical care that Bliss provided and his team to see like, did he kill him or did he do the best he could? And this was like, cause there's been a lot of conversation about what actually finally killed him. Was he septic? Like it wasn't as straightforward as they got bacteria in the wound. He became septic and died because that would have happened much faster. Mm-hmm. Obviously it happened over the course of 79 days. So what else would have triggered this? He may have had a bout of cholecystitis, which is like an infection, inflammation of the gallbladder, which would have been very difficult to treat at the time because we didn't have antibiotics and we couldn't do surgery easily because no anesthetic and no, you know, all that kind of stuff. So anyway, there's a lot of debate. Did Bliss and his team really cause his death or was the death inevitable? And maybe he just wasn't doing anything helpful, but it was inevitable. Either way.
Maybe he heroically kept him alive for 79 days with his dirty, dirty fingers. Maybe that happened.
Maybe he did.
Maybe that's what happened.
Maybe he did.
Skilled, filthy, jam-stained fingers.
At the end of it all, Bliss, even after President Garfield finally succumbed to illness, to sepsis from something, he gave a bill to the government for $25,000, which would be equivalent to $760,000 now. The government offered him $6,500, which would be equivalent to $200,000.
Not bad.
Yeah. And he was insulted and refused.
Wow. What a guy.
So he will forever be. Hey, did you notice I didn't kill him off?
Yeah, thank you.
I mean, he is no longer alive, but you probably guessed that.
Well, no, they didn't have to because you clarified at the beginning of the show that he was dead. You put the death at the beginning.
well,
you don't need to kill him twice. Sid.
We all understand human lifespans here at Sawbones, but it's interesting because he will. I think if you know his name, other than being known for the doctor who was named Doctor, he will also always be remembered as he was the doctor who treated at least one president, James Garfield, maybe more. To limited success, one might say.
Hey, he gave it his best. There's a really good book about this that I read a long time ago called Destiny of the Republic that goes into more of the like Alexander Graham Bell stuff and all that stuff. I read it so many years ago, I've forgotten
all the relevant details. There's and it's only this episode that has renewed this in my memory. But it is a very good book. I remember that. The retention end, I don't know, but Candace Millard, Destiny of the Republic, it's a good
well,
book.
Well, and I mean, this is an area of medical history that has been so interesting because it intersects with, obviously, it was a president. And so it elevates it to this thing where there are tons of books and papers and studies and journal articles and opinion pieces out there discussing all of the various elements of Bliss's care and what was bad, what was good, what was normal for the time, but we wouldn't do now. You know what I mean? So, like, if you're interested, there's tons you can read about this. But I thought Dr. Bliss deserved a little more deep dive into his own history. And Cundurango does not cure cancer.
Sorry, folks.
So if you encounter Spoiler. It, don't use it.
That is going to do it for us for this episode. We hope you have enjoyed yourself. We hope you're enjoying your holiday preparations and travels, whatever those may look like. I want to thank the taxpayers for the use of their song Medicines as the intro and outro of our program. Candle Nights, our fake holiday, is beginning or has begun or will begin soon, depending on when you are observing. It's completely up to you. But we got some Candle Nights ornaments and posters in the store if you go to McElroyMerch.com. That is going to do it for us for this week. So until next time, my name is Justin McElroy.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
And as always, don't drill a hole in your head.
Maximum Fun,
a worker-owned network
of artist-owned shows,
supported
directly
by you.